Welcome to the Medical Advantage Podcast, where you can hear healthcare professionals, expert consultants, and industry thought leaders discuss the exciting new ideas and technologies that are changing the business of healthcare. Tune in to each episode as we hear from some of the most innovative minds in medicine about the future of healthcare and how your organization can stay profitable, efficient, and on top of industry best practices.
Welcome, everyone, to the Medical Advantage Podcast. I am your host, Selena Dussault, and today we are joined by Chad Anglum, Vice President of Growth here at Medical Advantage. For those of you new to our podcast and new to us, Medical Advantage is a healthcare services company providing a broad portfolio of services for medical practices, specialists, groups, and private equity. Today, we will discuss the critical importance of reducing and eliminating clinician burnout. Today, we'll seek to understand what is clinician burnout, identify signs of burnout in clinical staff, recognizing causes, and offer solutions to ensure that all of our providers are supported and balanced in their roles. We will discuss the impact burnout has not only on the clinician, but the broad-ranging impact that it has on all staff, patients, and healthcare organizations at large. The past few years have proven particularly challenging, rapidly accelerating an already elevated prevalence of clinician burnout. So today, we want to understand the current state of burnout, the primary causes of burnout and disengagement, but most importantly, how do we look ahead to mitigate this challenge and seek a more positive environment for all providers in our industry? Acknowledging and understanding these challenges helps us to seek innovative and impactful solutions that meet and hopefully exceed the needs of providers, patients, and medical staff alike. Chad, thank you as always for joining us to share your insights and experience.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Selena. I'm glad to be here.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your current thoughts on the state of clinician burnout. This is certainly not a new topic, but in the recovery from the pandemic and the healthcare staffing crisis, there's a concerning increase in reported burnout, resignation, and early retirement in clinicians as seen in modern reporting for 2022. I guess to get us started, I'd like to understand from your perspective, what frames and defines burnout in today's modern healthcare landscape?
Absolutely. And Selena, as we, you know, talked about bringing this topic to the pod, I had mentioned that I think I've been on three or four different clinician burnout committees over the last 8 or 9 years. So I've been doing in-practice work for just over 15 now. And 8 or 9 of those, we've been talking about clinician burnout. And unfortunately, we've got a flawed healthcare system right now. We've got, you know, unbelievable uncontrolled costs. And unfortunately, you know, it's not getting better. There's a snowball effect. COVID brought many new challenges and expectations. So unfortunately, we're seeing it every single day. We're, you know, in practice, elbow to elbow with these clinicians and their staff, and you just see the sadness, really lack of interest, and even distancing themselves from, you know, the patients and other staff. You can just see the fatigue in everyone's eyes. So we're seeing it every single day, and we're definitely out there trying to make it better. But there's a lot of options. There's a lot of opportunity. We're seeing light at the end of the tunnel. I think we're getting away from yoga and different retreats that, 5, 6, 7 years ago, everyone was throwing out there to a group of professionals that didn't have time to do their own job, let alone, you know, leave for retreats and spend daily time, you know, at the yoga studio. So, no, I'm excited to talk more about this today.
Thank you, Chad. And as you mentioned, you know, these items, these definitions are certainly not new, but unfortunately, in the past couple of years, those terms are becoming more and more prevalent in day-to-day conversations, day-to-day operations. And now all healthcare staff are really on high alert to identify some of these behaviors and reduce them in all of the defining parameters that we understand around burnout. But naturally, there's some notable causes and precursors to some of those behaviors and identifiers, and those have certainly evolved over the past couple of years, but we do see some common themes. Can you talk us through what some of the most common causes of burnout are now today?
Yeah, I think if you ask, you know, 10 clinicians, you'd probably get 8 of them that bring up admin tasks right from the start. So things like filling out forms, figuring out prior authorizations and that whole process, network restrictions, you know, the need for insurance companies to make profits, documentation of quality metrics is huge, dealing with different formularies. I mean, all this stuff coming at them when they just want to care for the patient. They want to take advantage of that face-to-face time. That's time as a clinician you'll never get back. And if you are spinning around in circles and pounding on your keyboard the whole time, you know, you're not getting what you need from that relationship with your patient. So admin tasks are a big problem. And like I said, I bet 8 out of 10, if you surveyed, would say that. After hours workload. So all that stuff when you're pounding on the keyboard and you're not able to find when you're face to face with your patient, you put that to the side and say, I'll do that when I have time. When do you have time? After hours, when you're supposed to be resting or with your family or, you know, just seeking that work-life balance. And unfortunately, you know, many clinicians now are spending all of their time focusing on their job instead of seeking that work-life balance. And then let's say tools, IT-related tools, software that hurt efficiency. And what does that mean? I think it kind of pairs with, again, the need for insurance companies to seek profits and all these new rules related to quality metrics and documentation. It's all being thrown out there at the same time. And the blame is often the technology. The EHR is making me do this. It's making me do tasks that somebody else used to do. It's making me document quality metrics that I know I'm taking care of. My patients are very healthy. I do a great job. But now we're in a spot where that's got to get back to the insurance companies to prove it's been done. And, oh, there's a real efficient way to do that using technology, A, if it's all set up correctly, and B, if you do it. And again, going back to time, a lot of these clinicians don't have the time to sit there and spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour on a note to get everything in there to prove that they did their job. And that's super frustrating. So I think all three of these things are kind of interwoven. You know, they're struggling to use technology. Well, a lot of them bought the baseline package from the technology company because of cost. You know, when you're looking at buying a new EHR, or maybe you are buying a dashboard product or a patient portal website combination, you know, virtual front door, that's a lot of money. And you're kind of trusting the rep that you're talking to at the software company to guide you in the right direction to make you successful. But often it's a money play. And you say, I'm going to buy this baseline package. Well, unfortunately, you're often getting the baseline implementation, the baseline product, and nothing connects. It's here you go out of the box, and it doesn't make you more effective or efficient in your practice. You know, there's oftentimes a need to connect all those different solutions and optimize them for your need, for what payers you're working with, for what quality programs you've joined, for, you know, the patient population that you have, for, you know, how you're seeing patients. Are you doing it all in person? Are you adding some virtual, you know, there's a lot of different things that go into, you know, making you more efficient using technology. So I think technology, it gets the negative connotation most commonly because it's not set up properly. So, you know, we work to do that every day with different groups, and we start to see, again, light at the end of the tunnel when everything starts to connect. But bottom line, things are changing so rapidly as well that even if you are investing in technology and trying to keep it as efficient as possible, things are changing, and it's hard to catch a moving target.
You're spot on there, Chad, and it addresses sort of the age-old question, does that technology cure the problems or does it cause new ones, right? EHRs are designed to reduce time spent on those tasks that lead to more hours tacked onto the end of the day, but largely that's dependent on the use, the implementation, the training of that technology to be able to augment the practice. So just like you said, it's tough to achieve a moving target as technology is always growing and changing, but the better process that can be put in place for leveraging that technology in a way that makes the most sense for your specific practice, the more successful it will be. And you can see where the technology then takes some of the load off of not only the clinicians, but everyone in the clinic. So with that knowledge, we can definitely see some themes between some of the defining behaviors of burnout and the causes of burnout that you've discussed here, such as the administrative tasks, extensive hours, unsupportive technology, and how that results in those really visible and measurable effects of burnout, such as disengagement, potentially reduced quality of care, and just an overall negative feedback loop. Burnout impacts all levels of care, from senior executives to patients and families and everywhere in between. So, Chad, knowing the causes and effects of burnout in clinicians now, I think our next biggest question is, where do we go from here? There are countless initiatives that have been tested over previous years to reduce and prevent burnout, definitely some more impactful than others. So, can you talk us through some mitigation strategies? Ultimately, true solutions target the root cause, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on what best practices are today for developing mitigation strategies that will have meaningful impact in the field.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, a lot of the clinicians went into medicine to connect with and treat their patients, right? Unfortunately, that's being eroded by other non-patient care tasks and you know, hearing that all across the country, getting into how to fix that. I think it's really redesigning the practice. That's a big task, but we've seen that be most successful. It's not the retreats. It's not buying a new technology that's shiny and promises the world. It's adding medical assistants. It's adding scribes, either in person or remote, to create and spread out the work within the practice. And there are ways to pay for that. You know, the first thing you think of when you say adding is cost. Well, you know, with some of the new quality programs out there and some of the new codes, you know, we found ways to have practices pay for some of these new services to spread out the work and make the practice more effective and make it more welcoming, welcoming for staff, welcoming for the clinicians, welcoming for the patients, improving that, you know, patient flow, getting those scribes involved and really documenting what the clinicians are thinking instead of them trying to quickly, you know, peck on the keyboard and get a couple things down there so they can get on to the next patient. Enlarging some of the workspaces and making it more friendly. Having a social worker in the practice, where if there's a need, you can get patients over to the help that they need without the clinician sitting there going, I'm not a specialist at this. But you know, this patient needs help and care. And we're seeing that most commonly in these practices, getting care managers involved with the practice. And that helps all the way around. Not only does it take some of the burden off the clinician there with the patient, but it also helps improve their quality metrics. Patients are being healthier when they're able to see a care manager, social worker. We've talked through, you know, giving more vacations or cutting hours, and you're able to do that if the practice is set up properly for success. You're not putting all the burden on the clinician to do every single thing in the practice. We really want to focus on empowering staff other than those lead clinicians to take on tasks they can handle. I think we're going to see a big boom in nurse practitioners and physician assistants opening practices and taking on more of the healthcare system. I think payers are starting to see that that is the future, and it's been great. I mean, we've seen some really good relationships with not only NPs and PAs and their patients, but also NPs and PAs with physicians and specialists. And we're starting to see that healthcare ecosystem work. And more states are opening up full authority for that. You know, I think interoperability is something that we've been promised. Again, I've been in the EHR world for over 15 years. And, you know, way back then we were talking about interoperability, and you've got to get an EHR so that you can connect with everyone and you can have all the data available, you know, when the patient's in front of you and you can make these decisions. But yet it hasn't happened. And there are more and more laws coming down and penalties out there for information blocking, but there always seems to be a way where, you know, some of these software vendors are able to block and say, no, I'm not going to share that data, but you can use our add-ons, you can use our dashboards, or you can use our patient portal. You don't need to do add-ons. You don't need an interface. And that's just not fair, because it's not one size fits all in healthcare. And there may be a better solution out there for a practice. But, you know, they're slowly complying. We're seeing more and more of these mandates take hold, and we're starting to see some more interfaces. So unfortunately, I think it's going to be a slow process. I'd love to say we're going to see this in the next few years, but that's just not reality. We will see more and more of the larger EHR players push out the smaller and lesser players and dominate. And there'll be, you know, it seems like once a month now you're hearing of an EHR vendor buying another. So we're seeing consolidation there. But ultimately, it's about, you know, changing the way that you've always done it, and doing it in a more modern way where you have more of a team approach and don't feel like everything needs to be on the shoulders of the lead clinician.
It's a really great point that you make about the NPs, the PAs, and some of those creative staffing solutions within clinics. You know, while we're waiting for policies and mandates to catch up with the industry to help encourage those optimal operations in clinics, that is something that can come into play in the short term, is having creative staffing solutions to leverage the people and talent in the clinic to help offload some of that responsibility and just make operations move as smoothly as possible while the rest of the industry and the technology works to keep up. Chad, so some of the data around some of these mitigation strategies and programs are we're seeing highly positive feedback, which is interesting considering how notable the low participation in some of these programs is. Why do you think there's such low participation in burnout reduction programs? Is it low interest? Is it lack of awareness, or simply just lack of time to even implement these programs in a clinician's day-to-day work life?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head on that last one. So I think there's a ton of information out there. And if you Google clinician burnout or provider burnout or burnout, you're going to see a million different blogs and articles and websites designed around it, and more things that you can buy, and retreats you can attend, and a million other things. And unfortunately, it's time. You know, the biggest thing is these clinicians don't have the time to care for their patients like they would like to, let alone go and attend a offsite retreat for a long weekend. It's just not realistic. So I think getting to the point where some of that stuff is possible down the road is our ultimate goal. And in order to do that, you know, we really have to focus on optimizing these practices and, you know, getting patient flow to where it needs to be, getting patient engagement to where it needs to be, and getting staff members to be able to take on tasks that maybe they used to do prior to the EHR, but since the EHR was introduced, it's been on the clinicians, really balancing the workload back out and getting everyone into a place of work-life balance where you can still care for your patient population. You know, we've seen groups try many different things, joining ACOs. We've seen going into concierge medicine. We've seen some entrepreneurial groups do that. We've had them look into cash pay. We've had them look into new payers or even dropping payers that weren't easy to work with. So we've seen major adjustments there. But again, it's all around optimizing what you have in front of you and making changes to be a modern practice and using some of the new tools and technology that's available to be more effective.
So, John, knowing what's worked and what's not worked in the field, based on what you just mentioned, what are your predictions of the evolution of burnout in the coming years? You touched on this a little bit, that we'd love to see that drastic improvement in the coming years, but there's surely a lot of work to do. Are we at a point now where that we can expect to start seeing some improvement over the next year or so, or is it still really a struggle to get things under control?
You know, I think we're still a few years of really working at this to get to a point where we're going to be there, be where we need to be. A big part of that is interoperability. If you're, again, as a provider, as a clinician, if you're sitting there and you don't have the data you need in front of you, it's so frustrating. And that just leads to your day snowballing from there. You know, you're sitting there and you've got your patient in front of you and you don't have access to their lab results. It's really hard to have a conversation with that patient. And again, that leads to just fatigue. I mean, by the end of the day, that happens over and over and over. And as a clinician, you're like, I can't do my job without the access to the information. So I think interoperability is huge. I think, you know, we're seeing that as a major focus. We're seeing more and more rules coming, you know, with the Cures Act and different things where we're trying to stop information blocking, but that is a slow process. You're talking really powerful companies across the board, from the software companies to the insurance companies, that are just making that so difficult on our clinicians. I think revamping the office, you know, we're seeing that it's probably the fastest moving fix to all of this is redesigning your office. Unfortunately, we're still seeing a lot of lagging when it comes to the payers paying for some of those services that are so necessary. We see programs pop up here and there, but they don't seem to stick. But you know, there are ways to make it work. Like I said, we've worked with some groups that are super successful now due to incorporating care managers and social workers within their practices, being able to, you know, work with remote scribe companies, being able to bring on some new employees in the office, being able to utilize technology like virtual front door and being able to empower the patients to do more. Instead of having them, you know, on the phone all day and taking up 3 or 4 of your staff members' time, you know, directing them to use the patient portal, it's just so much more effective for communication and really optimizing the portal and the virtual front door so that the patients can actually do more and feel comfortable doing more. And a lot of that is the talk track from the staff members, from the front office to the clinicians to the billers, of actually engaging with the patients and letting them know, hey, use the patient portal. You will be shocked at how much you can accomplish without having to call the practice. So a lot of that's just teaching and training, you know, sitting with these different practices every single day. We're seeing that if you can get everyone to buy in within the practice, the patients surely buy in very quickly. So I, I definitely would love to say this is something we're going to stop talking about burnout within a year. That's not realistic. You know, we're definitely getting there, but we've got a flawed healthcare system right now, as I mentioned in the very beginning. And because of that, you know, we feel like we're digging out of a hole. And there's a lot of people fighting for the clinicians. And, you know, we're definitely one of those groups.
Thank you, Chad. There surely are some industry-wide changes that need to be made to seek a full solution, which can feel a little bit discouraging at times, but there are surely things that can be done right at the clinic level to have a measurable and positive impact in the short term. Most notably, as you've mentioned, leveraging that technology and creative staffing solutions in a way that are engaging and encouraging and supportive rather than further increasing administrative responsibility. We've known that go live support and training are crucial to EHR success all along. And training your trainers, especially super users, are essential in reducing or outright avoiding EHR and technology headaches in your day-to-day operations. It really is important to build trust within your organizational leadership and IT, putting structures into place that give providers a voice in the use of technology, facilitating quick responses to enhance their requests, and really just ensuring that all voices are being heard with regard to technology without increasing the administrative burden of utilizing that technology in day-to-day processes. With respect to organizational leadership and IT, you know, having that trust in place, having a consistent procedure in place to offer insight and opinion on the use of the EHR and technology in the clinic is absolutely essential. However, you know, the work to actually implement some of those changes, that optimization, the training cannot always be on the provider. So it's really important to have that structure and that triage in place to know that timely support and adjustments can be made and notice that there is a measurable impact to that when requests and feedback are given. One other helpful approach with respect to decreasing after hours workload and taking that documentation home with you is the use of scribes, just another creative staffing approach. Having scribes in clinic to help offload some of that documentation burden. And, you know, we can also consider the benefit of sprint events. So rather than having a process for triaging requests for optimization and input in the EHR, having pointed events or focus with respect to optimization can really be helpful for segmenting focus in optimization. Having a specific topic that requires attention and training, measuring those impacts after a sprint event, and then moving on to something else that may be a point of concern. So Chad, as we start to wrap up here a little bit, I'd like to hear from you if you have any specific overall thoughts or words of wisdom on where to start. We know that the industry is working diligently at the payer level and the technology company level to implement changes and mandates, but in the short term, what would you recommend clinics focus on to have a measurable and meaningful impact, say, over the next year or two?
Yeah, I think the key is there's no magic solution. You're not just going to buy a piece of technology and all of a sudden, you know, you're fixed. I think it's definitely, there needs to be a focus on redesigning the practice. Like you mentioned, there needs to be stakeholder buy-in. Everyone needs to buy into the process. I think assessing what you currently have, everything from your workflow and processes to the technology that you've purchased and implemented, doing a full assessment on everything and going from there. I think, you know, I was in a spot for many, many years where we were selling EHR technology and many people have asked, you know, why did you stop that? Why did you stop selling EHRs? Well, because it wasn't fixing anything. People were, if you had a problem with one EHR, you had the same problem with the next one and the same problem with the next one. And money was just being spent left and right, and you weren't getting anywhere. It was like you were stuck in quicksand. And that was actually, I sat with a clinician one time that says, I feel like I'm on my third EHR. I'm in the exact same spot I was after purchasing my first. And that's where we really started focusing on optimization and just aligning everything and ensuring everything connected properly. And that's where we get back to the whole, you're buying the base solution out of the box. And unfortunately, that's not efficient. So really spending time and focusing on assessing what you currently have in place, have a full assessment done on your practice. And then, you know, have an expert that's been into hundreds of practices tell you, you know, this is what I would do to make you more efficient and effective. And surely it's going to mean moving people to different spots and moving tasks all around and rebalancing the workload. But that's where you need to be. You know, when you're talking about redesigning the practice, it's ultimately moving the workload around and balancing it all out. And that's where we're seeing the biggest improvement on burnout reduction right now across the country.
That's great. Thank you, Chad. And the biggest takeaway there that we've heard over and over again is that clinician engagement and buy-in from staff across the board, just how critical that is to the performance of any healthcare organization. And in particular, ensuring that the providers are well supported must be a top priority in developing any strategy to prevent and reduce burnout. Thoughtful planning and strategy is absolutely critical. We have to understand the root cause of their burnout, may it be technology and EMRs, the bureaucratic burdens, or staffing shortages. It's sure to vary across every organization, but recognizing and accepting what that root cause might be within your organization is, you know, has to be the target to identify that root cause and having meaningful impact on well-being and engagement in any sort of mitigation strategy. And thank you, Chad, so much for your time and your thoughtful insights today. We really appreciate continuing this conversation, and I hope we have the opportunity to dig in even further as we see new strategies come into play and changes happen across the industry. To our listeners, thank you always for listening and joining in. And as always, we are here should you have any questions or wish to learn more. Thank you, everyone, for your time today.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Medical Advantage Podcast, where we discuss the ideas and technologies changing healthcare and what they mean to your organization. For more information, visit us at medicaladvantage.com and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a show.